around the country, and we all went to Christmas Mass together. You know, he was all dressed up in his Buddhist finery. It was one of those awful, dreary Catholic churches on Long Island where the priest talks about communism and birth control. And as I was sitting there in Mass, I was wondering, what in the world is going on? I mean, here I am, I'm a grown man, and there's this strange person living in the house, and I'm not working. I mean, you know, I was doing nothing but scribbling little poetry in my diary. I can't get a job teaching anymore, and I don't know what I want to do. When all of a sudden, a huge creature appeared, looking at the congregation. It was about, I'd say, 6'8", something like that, you know, and it was half bull, half man, and its skin was blue, had violets growing out of its eyelids and poppies growing out of its toenails, and it just stood there for the whole mass. I mean, I could not make that creature disappear. You know, I thought, oh, well, you know, I'm just seeing this because I'm bored, you know, close. I could not make that creature go away. Okay, now, I didn't talk with people about it because they'd think I was weird, but I felt that this creature was somehow coming to comfort me, that somehow he was appearing to say, well, you may feel low and you might not be able to create a play right now, but look what can come to you on Christmas Eve. Hang on, old friend. I may seem weird to you, but on these weird voyages, weird creatures appear. It's part of the journey. You're okay. Hang in there.
This is Damien.
Douglas.
And this is Douglas.
And Douglas is somewhere over there. He's in a corner staring at Newegg and Amazon and all those things.
Of course.
Wishing
not.
His credit card could allow more money.
What are you talking about?
It is sad how right you are. It is kind of eerie as if you're hacking into his computer. But you're about 99% correct.
What, is it the credit card bit was wrong?
Right, that's the only part. He doesn't have his credit card out looking. I don't think Douglas understands that the credit... He actually holds up his credit card to the items on the screen and listens if he can. Don't know how that works.
Damien, have you seen the A-Drive?
So we are a movie and TV show, mostly movie podcast. And we talk nonsense about movies. Andrew, since you're furthest away, what have you seen this week?
I've seen a few films. Right. The first film I want to talk about is the new Robert Zemeckis film, Flight, which I saw yesterday. And this movie is a big pile of fucking shit.
Mm-hmm. Those are some strong words, Andrew.
Subtle.
Tell
us what you really think.
The movie starts out with this really great 15-minute block, which is basically the crash, which we see in the trailer. And the way that Robert Zemeckis puts us in that plane as we are watching both Denzel Washington do this amazing feat and how the passengers are being put through this ordeal, it's kind of amazing. But once the crash is over and we wake up in the hospital with Denzel going, I survived or whatever, the movie then follows into an hour plus of Alcoholics Anonymous heavy-handed bullshit. And at the same time, it never quite gives us a full-blown reason as for why Denzel as a character is being so unsure as to why he should or shouldn't drink, he should go to Alcoholics Anonymous, he should lie about this or that. And it feels like the writers just threw scenes together, where in one scene he's like, fuck this shit, I'm gonna drink. The next scene, he's ready to break down in tears. There's even one moment later in the film where he gets to meet his co-pilot after the crash. And it's kind of obvious from that opening scene when he first meets his co-pilot. It seems like it's the first time he's flown with this guy. And the co-pilot doesn't quite like something about Denzel. Maybe it's the fact that he smells like alcohol. I don't know. And then it goes into this Jesus tirade for the next minute and a half. And it's like, it just feels bad throughout. I didn't like that movie, guys.
Okay. Well, thanks for saving me. How much does it cost to go to the movies again? Like $4,000? I don't even know.
But I really want to watch that movie.
Yeah, but Andrew just said that the movie is... The trailer that we saw is the first 15 minutes.
Before we get into what Andrew said, I'd like to remind you of what Andrew said about certain other things.
No, let's... Douglas, that's not fair.
Damien, The Dark Knight... Or no, not The Dark... Yes, it was The Dark Knight. Was not number one on his top 10 because he didn't want people to rag on him for it. I think that was
I'm pretty sure that was the logic.
Yeah.
But... What he went on a while ago to further describe an hour of Alcoholics Anonymous nonsense. So, yeah. Although Denzel is in it, so I'll probably watch it anyway.
Just watch the first 15 minutes and then fall asleep.
Fair enough.
I think that's the best way to do it.
TV? Sorry, Andrew.
We're looking continue. At Once Upon a Time, but let's not get into that.
What else have you seen? Flight is bad.
I also watched Pitch Perfect today.
Mm-hmm.
How is that? That looks like it could go either way.
I liked a lot about this movie, but at the
this movie was bad. I've heard people talk like this before.
This is the Andrew I know.
It's not a great movie. I mean, it gets a lot of things right. There's the... And I think it's mostly to the fact that I enjoyed Anna Kendrick's character that much, that her level of cynicism and just... alternative, I don't even want to use that word feels dirty to be using, alternative to what's being forced down her throat while being in this, having to go to college, which she didn't want to do, and having to be in this group, the a cappella group and stuff. It has a lot of fun moments to it. I mean, but at the end of the day, it's going to be one of those movies which within a 2-week span you're probably going to forget most of it. I do love Anna Kendrick so much.
I'm sure you do.
Okay.
Can I tell you the biggest draw? Well, I don't want to say it's the biggest draw, but for me, this movie, as I say, it looks like it could go either way. It looks like it could be good. It looks like it probably is really bad. But the the guy that seems to be like the arch nemesis or the leader of the arch nemesis of Anna Kendrick's group, this very short, stocky man, he's really funny. I saw him do stand up when I was in LA, and he has his own TV show on Comedy Central, which is hit or miss. Called
which one is his show? Yeah,
his show is Workaholics. And so. I would like to see him in something other than that show because, as I say, it's very hit or miss. But yeah, I would watch this movie for him.
Yeah, I mean, definitely give it a try. It'll be I think it's best like as a rental or a matinee film or something like that. But we don't have matinees.
No, we don't. And movies open at 5 and close at 11.
The other film I saw, I watched Sinister. How is that? The new horror film.
That looks horrible.
By Scott Derrickson with Ethan Hawke. I loved it.
You loved it from the trailer, Andrew. Remember that trailer that you saw and convinced yourself that was good? And was it Cargill or some other film critic guy wrote the movie?
Massaworm. Robert C. Cargill.
Okay, whatever.
C. Robert Cargill.
So,
listen, Andrew, I just gave him his name, okay?
Andrew, I know I'm probably not going to like the movie because I don't really like these kinds of movies, but sell me on this movie. What exactly is so good about this movie?
Okay, so the movie is about a writer who moves, a guy who is a true crime writer. So he finds all of these cases of these unsolved cases or cases that look kind of funny, and then tries to basically usurp the police's work and write a novel about it. He's had this one big hit book from way back when, and all of his other books so far have been mediocre, and people have said he doesn't quite get it right as he did the first time, and he's looking for that next big hit. So he moves to this town where there was this murder, which we saw in the trailer, of this family being hung by a tree. And he happens to move his family into the very same home in which it happened.
Oh, shit.
And the thing that's most interesting about this movie is that it tries to play a lot with the found footage idea. Not in the sense that where we end up watching, the movie ends up becoming a found footage film. It's not that. It's that once he moves into this home, he finds this box of 8mm films, which all turn out to be films of these murders happening, including the one that's related to the book he's trying to write. And it just becomes this interesting idea of the images we watch and how they shape us and how they can turn us. Now, towards the third act, as with all horror films, there is a bit of a supernatural element which comes in, and that was kind of iffy, but it kind of takes a turn, like, in the last 20-15 minutes, and I kind of enjoyed that reveal, and it's mainly because of what the actual object of fright is. I don't want to spoil it, of course, but I just have always found that to be one of the most, I think the best word is easiest, but it most effective frightful thing that a filmmaker can put into his horror movies, and I enjoyed it for that. And also, it kind of brought me around to this idea, thinking, and you guys can answer this as well. Are horror films more effective when you go and you watch them in a theater, as opposed to just sitting down at home on your couch where you're like, I can look at my phone, or I'm out of my head a lot more just thinking about things I could be doing, as opposed to watching this movie?
I don't know. I haven't seen that many horror films in the theater, I guess. Prometheus, is that a horror film?
No, that's not a horror film.
Then no. For me, I don't think you'd change, because I watch horror movies the same way I watch all movies. I ensure that the place is extremely dark, and it's usually just me alone, and I sit down and watch the movie. So it should be as effective, but maybe having it on a giant screen with people around you screaming at you and throwing popcorn and telling people not to go up there, maybe that makes for a better experience. I don't know.
Thank you for trying your best to ruin my point entirely. but there are a good amount of jump scares in this movie, and
it's a horror movie.
I feel like they work. I mean, the thing about jump scares is that at the end of the day, we're like, oh, you used sound to just make me think I'm supposed to jump right there. But I feel that most of them generally work in this film. I'm not going to call this a perfect movie. I'm not going to call it the movie that'll end up, the horror movie that'll end up on my top 10 list at the end of the year. But I thoroughly enjoyed it. Yeah. And I hope you guys go and see it.
Absolutely not. You've not sold this movie, even a little bit. All right. Anything else?
I want to give a mention only so that I can save everyone else from ever doing this in their life.
Okay.
Do not watch the movie High School.
Okay.
the movie from up to a couple years. I think it finally came out on DVD either this year or last year. With Adrian Brody as a weed dealer,
oh,
and his children decide.
Okay.
Yeah. Don't watch that movie. From around the 5-minute mark, it becomes plainly obvious that this movie is a bag of garbage. I then force myself to suffer through another hour and 25 minutes of
good
rush.
Work.
Well done.
Someone had to do it. I'm just glad it was you.
And I finished watching Sports Night, the TV show from the late 90s.
I know that show with Benson.
With Benson? Who's Benson?
I'm sorry, what? Okay, the executive producer. Look up his IMDb page. Look for a TV show called Benson. It was only one of his most famous TV shows he's ever been in. That's all.
Okay, him, yeah. Robert.
I think he starred as somebody's butler, and his name was Benson.
Okay.
Yeah. He's really good in it. Yeah, it's Aaron Sorkin's first TV show.
Yeah, and it starts off badly. I started watching that on Netflix because I remember thinking it was good, and it really wasn't.
It's really odd in the beginning because, first of all, what I find weird is that Sorkin, he never writes it as a traditional sitcom. I mean, it is kind of sitcom-y, but not exactly. It's very much like how he is in The Newsroom and in Charlie Wilson's War and such, and his comedy comes from a slightly different place. But at the same time, it's obvious that the station that aired it, they were very much thinking it was a sitcom. And for like the first half of the first season, they have a laugh track in there. And it feels so weird to hear Aaron Sorkin with a laugh track. But at around the halfway point of the first season, it goes away. And the show is enjoyable. It's fun. I liked it. Josh Molina is great in that show. And that's pretty much what I've been watching. I'm still watching Bond movies, but I won't talk about that now.
I hear you.
Because that involves Moonraker.
Okay. So good. So very good. Douglas?
Alright, so what I've been watching... actually, I think I'm going to only talk about one thing, because both myself and Damian have a couple of joint ventures that we are.
You can talk about those two movies. Other movies I'll talk about.
All right, but well,
one in particular.
I'll at least start off with the only other thing that I watched. I saw this week Mirror Mirror, which is Tarsem Singh's.
How'd that go?
Oh wow!
Fever dream. That's what that is.
Yes, well, I look at it this way. In order for us to get The Fall, we had to brave through movies like The Cell and a lot of his earlier things to get there. So I think that we're now in the braving through section, because if you look at Immortals, while it's not disgusting, it's close. If you look at Mirror Mirror, while it's not disgusting, it's close. I think that we're in that low period.
Better than the other Snow White movie, I can tell you that.
Well, I wasn't even going to try watching the other Snow White movie.
And
this,
the Huntsman.
As I said, this movie is not that great. It, of course, as with any Tarsem Singh movie, is beautiful. And a lot of the things that happen, even not only just the visuals or the CG, but the way that he has someone move is just perfect. If only he had a story and acting to back it up, and he didn't. I mean, he has, well, two big names really in this movie, which are Julia Roberts and Nathan Lane. Nathan Lane, who
about the Winklevoss guy?
No, he's not a big name.
proving my own point. I call him the Winklevoss.
Army Hammer.
Yeah.
Is that a real name? You name your son? Well, no, that must be a stage.
The last name is Hammer. So anything you call your son, if as long as it's not MC, you've made a good choice.
But it sounds like
done that on purpose. I would have gone to the wife and says, I want to name him Marlon Charles Hammer.
Army Hammer. It sounds like something that a G.I. Joe character
would name. No, it sounds like a porn name.
That too. But no, I rate Nathan Lane as one of the most underrated character actors that it has been around.
That sense. You'd have laughed at Andrew if he made that sentence.
What? No, man. Nathan Lane is...
Douglas, someone as the most underrated.
Oh. All right. Uh-huh. Fair enough. I agree. Uh-huh.
Agree with you on that statement, Douglas, because you get to laugh at me now. But the only difference is, unlike a lot of the other character actors, he doesn't really get a lot of those roles. I mean, he's like the Jason Alexander of character actors.
Yeah, he is. You're very right. And the roles that he does get are in mostly smaller movies, and his big roles are few and far between. Well, not when I said big roles, his small roles, because he gets nothing but small roles in big movies, are few and far between. And that's really sad. But that said, this movie, I would be stretching to say that it was average, and I'm going to try and make that stretch, okay, because I love Tarsem Singh so much. Otherwise, what I watched...
It's a shame, lie I told myself.
Yeah. So otherwise, what I watched, and both myself and Damon can kind of chime in on these, because we actually went to both of these movies together. We saw... there is a particular order. We saw Argo,
right.
Which I prefer to refer to as Argo Fuck Yourself. And
that's what they say in the movie. It's not.
Alan Arkin just makes anything better.
He does, doesn't he?
Argo Fuck Yourself.
And Looper. And I, for those of us who are not around, the order is good to great, right? Those of us who don't realize this. Argo is the third installment in the Ben Affleck collection. And he delivers as per usual. I don't think, and it might be that the first movie surprised me and blew me out of my shoes, out of my socks, out of anything, right? I still don't think he's reached that level again. I don't think he's ever reached or beaten his first movie, but he's come pretty close, I think, with this one.
I think Argo is his best movie so far.
I think I disagree with both of
you.
I disagree with Andrew that Argo is the best one. I still like Gone Baby Gone the most. But to say that the other two movies haven't reached that level, I think all of them are pretty much on the same level. They're equally as good. No, you can just have your preferences.
The tone is fantastic. The tone is a good movie, but I would definitely not put it in quite as high up as Gone Baby.
I don't know what it is about the tone that you don't like, though.
It's a good movie.
Right, you can't explain why.
As I say, I think it is just the
that's
sheer...
how movies work. You don't have to.
Like, I blame. All right, if you really want to get into the tone,
want to get into the tone. We're talking about Argo. Let's focus on Argo.
Okay, so Argo was a really good movie. For those of you who don't know, Argo is about a guy making a fake movie in a real movie in order to get his fake movie makers out of a real bad country. Yeah.
Close in.
Okay, good.
And so these are all fake stories.
Andrew, why do you have to go there again? Oh, God.
Can I leave now?
This movie is it has a dash of it has everything. It's a thriller. It has a dash of kind of lightheartedness, and it gets extremely serious at times, and it brings all of those pieces together perfectly, and you can't really ask for much more than that.
Well, you can, but you'd be a lunatic.
You'd be an asshole.
Yeah, you'd be a lunatic.
So, Damien, you have anything? Anything to say about that?
Like all of Ben Affleck's directed movies.
Right,
I was about to say movies.
We have to be careful.
Ben Affleck's movies. The three movies he's directed, I'd give each of them about 8.5, 9 out of 10. I really enjoy them. I've seen them, with the exception of Argo, which I've only seen once. I've seen The Town and Gone Baby Gone at least once every 6 months. I always find myself watching these movies, or whenever people, like, they're safe movies that everybody can watch. I like movies like that where I don't have to explain to somebody why I like the movie or why I think they like the movie. They're just good movies. There's no caveats. People come over, they want to watch something. And instead of them just watching shitty movies where shit blows up, I just have them watch, you know, a decent movie. And they won't be bored. I won't have to hate them for not being, you know, film connoisseurs.
Yeah.
So that's true. Like the fact that he makes these kind of broad audience movies, but he still makes intelligent, mature movies. And that's really funny, because a lot of the movies that he came in are horrendous. I guess he used himself as, you know,
I'm going to be
in these movies.
No, you know exactly
to see what terrible
happened.
Movies
no,
feel
no.
like.
So hold on, I have a question. I have a question for you guys, right?
Yeah.
Before all of this, the biggest joke about Ben Affleck had to do with the thing about, oh, Matt Damon just put his name on the script of the thing just because he's friends. Do we now take that all away? Do we give him so much more credit now for that?
That was
Oscar
always
win?
A joke, though.
Yeah, it was always a joke. But the truth is, for anybody who believed us, he clearly has proved that it's
right.
True. it's there's no well yeah he has
no but I mean even as much of a joke it was, we did kind of take a lot of credit away from him in general.
That's because he kept coming in bad movies. Like the only reason we gave him that much shit is was because he was in a lot of bad, like every time you saw him in a movie you could kind of assume that the movie wasn't going to be that good. And then he directed Gone Baby Gone, and we all went, yeah, but, you know, maybe that's a fluke. But now he's cemented himself as a good director, and now whenever we see his name and director beside it, we get excited. So, I mean, it's like we give a lot of actors shit on this podcast, because that's what we do. And their job is to entertain us and make us eat those words. But if you fail to do that, what are we supposed to do? Pretend that we like actors that we really don't like? That's just as ridiculous.
And guess what, Ben, you have been the first to make us eat those words.
Yeah.
Pat yourself on the back for that. I mean, I know that we are important to you. Our voice, our opinion matters to you.
I mean, we have, what, 7 billion listeners? We're the best.
I mean, I think what we should do right now, just for the sake of it, is we should talk about Geely for half an hour.
Let's never do that, ever.
I remember when movie first came out, Andrew was looking forward to it.
Can we go back to talking about Argo?
No.
That movie at the first opportunity. The first.
No, Douglas. Douglas, what bullshit are you making up about me now?
Andrew's not sitting for
me. I'm pretty sure I have a recording where Andrew danced like a little girl because he saw that trailer.
Shut the fuck up, Douglas.
I mean, not only was Ben Affleck in it, but so was Al Pacino. He almost lost his mind.
It's times like this I wish I was editing the podcast. Oh God, he'd be so good. So Argo is fantastic. Andrew let us know that a long time ago, because he's an ass. But it was good to know that he was right.
Last week.
Yeah, that was too long ago.
But there was another movie, Andrew, that you saw quite a while back when you went to the Canadia. And that movie was Looper.
The Frozen Tundra. They're called Canada.
This movie is... I don't think there's much other to say than fantastic and flawless and I think I need to... go wipe up anyway. This movie is great. There you can find nothing wrong with it. It's novel. It's entertaining. It hits all the action criteria that you need. It hits all anything that you want.
But Douglas, the time travel doesn't make sense and there are plot holes and the internet is stupid. So we watched the better movie first, which kind of dampened how good Argo was.
Yeah.
Which is our fault, but not really, because Carib had Argo showing at one time it, and Looper was showing. And Looper is still showing, which is good. They haven't taken it, because that theater was pretty empty.
It was. And it was in the big theater, too.
Yeah, when we went there. So I'm surprised that it's still up there. But, yeah. The thing with saying anything about Looper now is that Andrew has been... wetting himself about this movie for about 2-3 months now, and the rest of the internet is on board, and everybody who's seen this pretty much loves this movie, except for, of course, the internet being the internet. They find things to not like about things that a lot of people like, which is fine. You need something to counter the popular opinion, but no one is going to watch this movie and not like this movie. I don't see an audience that wouldn't walk into this movie and walk out and go, this movie is bad. It's just well executed. The acting is fantastic. The only thing me and Douglas were laughing about was some funny accent work that took place by one of our... Well, one of my favorite actresses, Douglas, is not so on board. Although he is on board now. Her performance was great. It's just that her accent kind of... But it's the future, so I guess that's what Southern accents sound like.
So the only question I have for you guys is, are you going to China?
No, I'm going to Paris.
I've been to China already.
Oh yeah, you have.
But actually, no. There's one other thing that we laughed about, and that is the £100 worth of makeup that was on Joseph Gordon-Levitt's face for them to make him kind of look like Bruce Willis.
The weirdest part about that is I didn't see it at all the first time I watched it, but when I watched it again,
you
like,
can't not see it.
It was there, like right in front of me. I'm like, oh jeez.
Once you see it, you can't not. That movie is so good.
It's superb.
I love how they do
I've been wanting
travel.
To tell you guys this since day one. How awesome is it that Garrett Dillahunt scene?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
When Garrett Dillahunt walks in, I'm like, yes.
I was so happy because I love him. I love him in anything he's in, except for maybe Raising Hope. But
no, the thing is, he didn't really do anything, you know. But his presence.
Yeah.
He's just so menacing. You thought everybody was going to die the second he walked through that door.
He has this voice, Damien, that just works.
That scene,
he just turns it on and you're like, yes.
That scene, though, the ending of that scene when someone tackles another person is magic.
Yeah, that was good.
Is moving.
Are you so happy that they left that out of the trailers? Huh? All right. Of that.
It's things like that that make you really love movies. You know, like, so good. But everybody knows that. Lupo is tremendous. It will be on everybody's top 10 this year. It's not even...
Yes, it will
It's
be.
Not even close.
There's no way that kind
of... I'm considering going and watching it again and taking... Ryan Johnson released a commentary online. Yeah, so just putting it on my phone and going to watch it. I'm thinking about it. I might do it.
So Douglas, was there anything else that you saw?
No, there was nothing else.
All right. So Aldous... pick up.
I definitely did not watch Headhunters.
Yes, you did not. I'm going to have to redact a few statements I made earlier in the year. The first one was not that long ago. I had seen only one episode of Ben and Kate and I disliked it. I have now seen the rest of the episodes of Ben and Kate and I'm now on board.
Wow. So I pat you on the back, sir.
No, funny is funny. Right. The first episode was not funny.
You've joined the cool crow.
Okay, Damien, that's it. I know this is pretty... I'm pretty sure this is stretching, but I'm going to ask anyways.
Mm-hmm.
Versus New Normal?
I haven't seen the rest of New Normal. So I can only go from what I remember about the first three or four episodes. I love New Normal because I love that sensibility. And I enjoy that the internet is complaining that, you know, the people in the New Normal don't represent real people, which is one of the most ridiculous complaints you can have about any movie or TV show, because none of the people on TV represent real people. But Ben and Kate, it's really funny. The second episode... by the end of the second episode, I went, oh, I guess I see now what Douglas and Andrew was on about. And by the sixth episode, I was like, yeah, this is really good. It's much better than a lot of the nonsense that we've seen last year.
I think one of my favorite moments, and it sticks with me, is there's this point, I can't remember which episode it is, where the blonde friend,
right.
They're having a discussion, her and Kate, and the blonde friend just replies, I'm lazy. Yes. Reporting to the media.
She's really good. Rob Corddry showed up. That episode was amazing.
Yeah. You know that blonde lady, right? Is the same. She's in Shaun of the Dead. And she's
her name is Lucy Punch, I think.
Yeah, yeah, that sounds right.
She's in a lot of other.
She's in a lot of like small TV shows. Roles.
I've seen her in another. I don't remember.
She's
the
in
TV
Bad
show.
Teacher.
Yeah, she was in Bad Teacher.
I hated Bad Teacher.
A lot of other madness. But, you know, the show is really good. It's really funny. They finally put in the jokes. And so, now I'm on board. The other thing that I'll have to redact was, earlier in the year, we saw Prometheus. And I said that, you know, the movie had problems, but it was still a worthwhile watch and it was a pretty good movie. I'm redacting everything about that statement. The first 30 minutes of that movie is probably the best 30 minutes of cinema I've seen all year. But that movie is 2 hours long and the other hour and a half is dross. It is a flaming pile of garbage. And the more I read on the internet, the more I am proven right that the movie is horrendous. The writing in that movie is so bad that no one on the internet knows what happened in that movie. No one can make sense of it. And everyone who likes the movie, what they're doing is inserting logic that the movie at no point gives them. Douglas did this. I went back and listened to the episode that we recorded. And Andrew also did it. And I did it. Because we're looking for something that isn't and won't ever be in that movie.
You know what, though? I'm just going to ask you one question because we've kind of come across this before.
Right.
Right? So what I did and what Andrew did in this movie was to make jumps, right? In the sense that there was a point A that the movie gave you and a point B that the movie gave you, but it didn't quite connect them and you connected the dots, correct? No, I want us
to... You attempted.
Okay, we attempted. Mm-hmm. All right. So I want us to go back to a conversation where we spoke about, I believe the movie was The Deer Hunter, where we said that, or you even specifically said, and we talked about that movie having that problem. By the way, before I even talk about problems, that's a really good movie, guys. Don't get me wrong. And if you want, go back to that episode. I can't remember when it was, but you'll hear that I think at least myself and Damien love that movie.
I think what Douglas is about to say is to the effect of it's not a bug, but it's a feature.
No. I'm not arguing for or against. What I'm saying is that how is it that Damien can be okay with say that it's a good feature? Because what he said about that was that a lot of movies in that time allowed you to make that jump, and that was what made them great, or that was one thing that made them great. Why now is this a bad thing for this movie?
All right, I'll explain. Back then, the reason that they did that was they made an assumption on the part of the viewers that they would be able to catch up. Right? They start you at a point and gave you no reference for that point, and then they simply move forward. There was no point after the movie started where the movie decided to yet again make another jump. They didn't start the movie and then ask you to connect something from the very beginning to something from the very end. What they asked you to do was look at where we started and just assume all of the information prior. We're not going to give you any of that. This is our start point and we're going to the end. What Prometheus does is give you a starting, then abandon that starting, and then they set up a whole other movie, and then they start making even more jumps. They start doing more things, and the crucial problem is they start asking more questions of the audience, right? The problem that Prometheus had is that none of the questions that were asked anywhere in this movie is answered. Not even at the start. Questions that came up in the middle, closer to the end, there are no answers in this movie. Prometheus was pitched as the prequel to Aliens. That is why everybody was on board. The only thing they gave us some semblance of an answer to was where the aliens that we know come from. And that answer is horseshit because they didn't explain any of that. A squid ate a white man and it became an alien at the end. Now, if we ignore that part, there's another 2 hours of movie that makes no sense, Douglas, to anybody. I know that because no one has been able to come up with any explanation as to why anything happened in that movie. At the start of the movie, I remember when we talked about it because I listened to the episode recently. Andrew asked us to ignore the first shot, the first scene with the white god creature drinking some black liquid. And because they gave us that and then they don't tell us what any of that is. You can assume a lot of things from that, but the movie doesn't give you any indication whether you're right or not. So you can say, yeah, he drank it and then he propagated the earth. But the movie, the thing that you saw, at no point gives you any hint to whether what you think is right or not. But then they start asking more questions, Douglas, and that is where the movie falls into a hole. And then they fall into horror movie cliches. It is 100 years in the future. People go into a hill. 2 people get lost. Those 2 people get murdered. You're on a strange planet. You see a strange creature. You go and pet it. Right? These are things that we've seen in all these movies. And they've always been bad. and it feels worse in this movie. Then there are the even larger questions, like, if the aliens crash landed on this planet 2,000 years ago, how did they die? If there's other ships, why didn't the other people on the other ships still carry out the mission? The home world hasn't heard from this crew in 2,000 years. Why would they send anybody to check?
To find out what happened.
Exactly. Now, these are gigantic questions. Why would the robot poison the guy? Why is Guy Pearce in the movie? Why is Charlize Theron the daughter? Just questions upon questions upon questions that have no answers. Why would the one lady that survived, who didn't believe in the holistic view that everybody had of this mission, why would she then want to find the alien planet? Why wouldn't she go home, tell everybody what happened, show them the magic new spaceship that she found in a far-off planet, and then have a second expedition with her luck? Like, none of this makes sense, though. That is the problem. We saw the movie, and we saw that it was beautiful, and so we gave Ridley Scott and these writers essentially a free pass. When I watch the movie again, I watch it with someone that is far smarter than I am. My sister tore this movie to pieces. Issues that I would accept and go, well, you know, it's a movie, my sister was unwilling to accept even for a nanosecond. Why is the machine that does the operations that Charlize Theron have in her room only does operations on men? Is Charlize Theron a man?
But hold on. Like, I really wasn't trying to engage you because I didn't want to stretch it.
Right.
Stretch the podcast out. But I will answer that one question about the man thing.
Yes. Charlize Theron's a man?
Guy Pearce is on the plane. The thing is for Guy Pearce.
Yes. But why is it in her room? Why wouldn't it have been in Guy Pearce's room? He had a special room in the ship. Why not keep it there? your silence speaks volumes. Andrew, the thing with this movie is it is written so poorly that no matter what Ridley Scott did, and he did a lot, the movie is terrible because it's times like this when I realize why it is that I hate Lost and you guys loved it. It's because ask...
Who is you guys?
Stuff. Andrew, sorry. You don't like Lost?
I don't have anything against it, but I definitely don't like it.
Fine. Now is when I realize why people like Lost. There's people out there who, when given the opportunity to create, you know, a rich backstory and dream up, you know, elaborate things about what happened, they jump at the chance. There's people on the internet that have come up with, I mean, mind-bendingly awesome theories as to what happened in Prometheus, right? And that is fine. I'm glad that those people enjoyed the movie. What I'll say to those people, though, is that what they have come up with is not in the movie that they watched. It is in their head, and only in their head. And if they want a template to... of which to launch, you know, their fan fiction off of, that is fine. That's not what I want. I wanted a movie that made some semblance of sense, and Prometheus is not that movie. Prometheus is the worst movie I've seen this year. It is worse than John Carter, because at least John Carter made some form of sense. Prometheus does not have any point. It is so aggravating because I wanted to like that movie. And when I listened to the podcast that I did before, it was clear that that is what was, you know, that was driving me forward. I went, yeah, you know, it's, there's things about the movie that's not that great, but, you know, it's kind of good. But it isn't kind of good. It is really, really bad. And, you know, there's people who blame Ridley Scott or there's people who blame the writers, but I don't care whose fault it is. The movie is bad. It asks questions. There's no answers. And there's so much ridiculous things a ship is falling on you, let me run in the same direction that the ship is falling. You're a scientist. You can't run perpendicular to a falling ship. Really? That movie is this garbage. And I'm going to, when I go home, I'm going to light that Blu-ray on fire. I'm going to film it to make myself feel better. And instead of putting Prometheus in XBMC, I'll just have me lighting the Blu-ray case on fire as the movie. Because that is what that movie is. It's a flaming fire.
I'll be the first to offer a new home to that Blu-ray.
No. No, no one is going to watch a movie. Mercer. Andrew, I know I'm coming off really harsh, but that is the only way to address this movie. This movie made so much money that they're going to make another one. And I know, I'm going to predict now that you and Douglas are going to be on board immediately. You're like, finally, some answers. I'm going to let you know now that unless we pick this movie, that movie to review, I'm not watching any more Ridley Scott anything. And that is a wrap for Ridley Scott for me. Right? You know what he should do?
No, he should direct. To pick in 2014.
He should direct the new Star Wars movies so that I'll never have to see a Ridley Scott movie again. Was it Episode 7? Yeah, that's what he should do. Ridley Scott direct Episode 7 and Prometheus, so I can just ignore that side of the internet forever. Alright, now that I've gotten out all that bile, what else have I seen? I've seen all of Black Dynamite, the cartoon show, and it is fantastic. There is a episode where Black Dynamite goes to the moon. He kills a bunch of Amazon.
Shit before I left the room.
He kills a bunch of Amazon moon women, and Santa Claus rescues him. And the episode is about O.J. Simpson. So yeah, it's pretty.
The best episode is the Race good. Wars.
No. You know what? Fine, I'll give it. I'll give you. The Race Wars was pretty good. Black Dynamite not laughing at Richard Pryor for our entire episode was fantastic as well. But Dynamite doesn't get jokes. He doesn't. You and your jokey jokes. Prometheus is hot garbage. Lupo is probably the second best movie I've seen this year. What else do we talk about? We talk about trailers, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what trailers are you guys going to talk about? I should let you guys know now that I've seen none of the trailers, so move right along.
Would you like to take 2 minutes Absolutely to watch?
Absolutely not. Nope. Scene unseen. You right, will describe the trailers and I will laugh at you.
So the only trailer I want to talk about this week is Side Effects.
911, what's your emergency?
I need help! Someone's been murdered!
There's been an incident.
What do we do?
No sign of forced entry, no sign of struggle.
Where's her lawyer?
She doesn't have one. Just kept talking about you.
I don't understand why this is happening.
You know her?
Would you have treated her differently if she was a man?
That's not what happened.
Em, what is going on?
Of course you would, you piece of shit. You know why he wants... Let me tell you why he wants us to watch this trailer.
I like this.
So, okay. I saw this trailer, and I wondered to myself. I said, why is Andrew making me watch this? So this movie looks fairly average. Stars Channing Tatum.
Ah.
And I was like, what the hell? What's going on? This doesn't look very good. It's a movie about... it's kind of like a thriller slash maybe horror movie about how this woman is taking these pills, these medicines. This medicine that is under some sort of test, like, you know, she's like a beta tester, essentially. She must have some sort of disease that she's trying to treat. And it has side effects. And these side effects can be fatal. Why? Because it seems like it might make her go crazy and kill somebody. And I was like, this looks like a stupid movie. It looks whatever. And then the name of the director came. Tell me. You have one guess. What's the name of this director?
Steven.
Steven whom?
Spiel. No. Moffat. No. Soderbergh?
Yes. So as soon as I saw that name roll across the screen, I said, fuck, that's why you wanted me to watch this trailer. This trailer is horrid, Andrew. Horrid.
Sucks balls.
No, I will allow you to retort.
This will be good. Andrew, come. Crush this man. Crush his soul. Give us the retort of your life.
First of all, I love that Damien could guess the director.
No shit.
With nothing other than a couple actors and Douglas's tone towards Andrew made us watch his trailer. I mean, there's so many directors you could have picked, I mean, to be honest.
Yeah.
But you got it right.
No doubt.
Oh my goodness.
The second Douglas reacted, I kind of knew that this is a Soderbergh movie, isn't it? Yeah, yep. There it is. On the nose. So, Andrew, would you care to explain why Douglas is wrong?
Douglas is wrong because he's using historical data.
Oh, he's using facts.
he's allowing his hatred for Soderbergh movies that he's not allowed to hate.
Okay, first off, hold on. Before we talk about hatred of Soderbergh, I think he's actually a very good director. I think he has done very good movies. He also has movies that are not very good. Mm-hmm. But I resent your proposal that I automatically don't like a movie because it's Soderbergh.
Also, ignoring this is not the end. Also, I think he just likes having fun trashing on one of my favorite directors just for the sake of it. You know, that Damien is beside him and they can kind of team up together and go like, Andrew, why do you love this guy so much?
Andrew, why do you love this guy so much?
I like his movies. but I will give Douglas this. This trailer isn't a fantastic trailer.
I'm sorry, Andrew, I have to cut you for a second. I'll call in the Soderbergh fan club. Let him know of this betrayal.
The movie, for some reason, it looks very much like he might just be rehashing a lot of his Contagion kind of vibe. It feels very much like a huge ensemble film. We only really see in the trailer Channing Tatum, we see Jude Law, we see Rooney Mara, there is Catherine Zeta-Jones, and there are a couple others who we see in there, and it's not quite sure how many or if there are even more than one storylines we're going to be following in this movie, but I think it might be just because in the back of my mind, I already know he did Contagion, and it's very much like this, you know, a medical... psychological film, and it's, I don't know what to expect, but I will give him Douglas, this isn't a great trailer. But on top of which, I want him to name a better trailer that came out this week for us to talk about.
A better trailer? Alright, let's think about this. There weren't very many great trailers.
There's a second trailer for some movie. Oh, G.I. Joe Retaliation. Now that they're going to actually put out that movie.
Didn't we talk about that trailer a year ago?
It was trash. We can talk about Despicable Me. They put out a trailer for that.
That was one of the trailers of us just laughing at the Minions.
Oh, well, a better trailer than this, here we go, I found one. Santa Paws 2, the Santa Paws.
All right, so now we move into our...
review.
Our review.
Actually, no, honestly, I would have preferred talking about John Dies at the end. And I'll tell you why. It's honestly, it's a lot of nostalgia, but also it has Paul Giamatti. It's directed by Don Coscarelli, who also directed Bubba Hotep. It looks like a similar type of movie, and I really love Bubba Hotep, probably mainly because of Bruce Bruce Willis. What's his
Campbell
name? Campbell, thank you, Andrew. Bruce Campbell.
Actually, his name is Sam Axe.
Sam Axe? Yep. Oh my goodness. What about Ash? No Ash, love?
No Ash.
Nope. Okay, so that was probably my biggest draw to that movie, but you can't have, you know, I've seen movies with Bruce Campbell alone where they didn't work out, but Bubba Hotep worked out well because
the
there was a good...
The man
with
two brains.
Exactly. There was a good mixture between Bruce Campbell's silliness and... the rest of the movie.
Okay, however, how about the trailer of John Dies at the end?
John Dies at the end, the trailer is... It kind of reminds me again of not good, but probably enjoyable experience, just as Bubba Hotep was, maybe. I don't know how to gauge it, whether it would be on Bubba Hotep's level or not. But... as I said before, I have some hope given that Paul Giamatti signed on to this. So maybe, you know, this could work.
Okay.
Paul
so
Giamatti also signed on to Ironclad.
Shit. So Douglas, I'm going to tell you as a fact.
Yeah?
Okay.
Bubba Hotep is a better movie and John Dies at the End is fucking shit.
Oh, have you watched this movie already?
I saw it at TIFF.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
That's kind of why I didn't even want to talk about that trailer. Oh,
dear wifey and mateys of the world, sort out. That is what I'm looking at on Douglas's screen right now.
Wait, sorry, what was this?
Dear wifey and mateys of the world, sort out.
Oh wow, yeah, and that picture is priceless.
I hate Jamaica now. And we're moving into
je vais vous raconter une petite histoire.
Je me rappelle la première fois où je vous ai entendu jouer. Je me suis dit que je n'avais jamais rien entendu d'aussi beau de toute ma vie.
Il était le meilleur violoniste de son temps.
La belle affaire. J'en ai marre de m'occuper de tout.
Vous savez en m'épousant que j'étais un artiste.
C'est trop te demander.
Now Douglas is still Douglas.
Yes, he is.
And so he, when Douglas said it, that it was his turn to pick a movie, I immediately shivered with fear. And then when Douglas picked a weird foreign movie, I put a plastic bag over my head, I screamed for about 3 minutes and passed out, and when I came to, I looked up again and saw that Douglas had indeed picked a weird foreign movie. The name of the movie is Chicken with Plums. What I will say in Douglas's defense is that the trailer is fantastic. It looks like a French fairy tale, and if you've seen enough of Douglas's picks, you'll know why that is a good thing. However, there's a problem with what the movie trailer promised and what the movie delivered, and it is the same problem with Noise. What was that the name of the movie?
Yeah, The Sound of Noise.
Sound of Noise. Where a trailer was presented, and the trailer did what the trailer is supposed to do, get you excited for watching a movie. But then you had to sit down and watch the movie. Now, about 20 minutes into this movie, I was a bit wary of the movie that I was about to watch. But I know that that's how a lot of these foreign films are. They sometimes take a while to get you into the movie, or the start of the movie isn't really indicative to what is going to happen towards the end. But in the back of my mind, the trailer was still present. So I was waiting for essentially a switch to happen from this kind of drab, kind of serious movie with some light-hearted elements to this whimsical movie that the trailer promised me. The problem with Chicken with Plums is that it never becomes the movie that the trailer promised. And it was especially aggravating because for the entire hour and a half run, even to the final shot, I was waiting on the movie that the trailer was promised me. And there are some specific shots in the trailer that when you get to them in the movie, I don't know if it happened to you guys, but when I saw the shots, like him running towards the thing and the guy holding up his hand and whatever, when I saw it in the actual movie, I went, that shot's not supposed to be there. That shot is supposed to be in the whimsical section of the movie. You are ruining this shot. Are you going to put this shot again in the better part of the movie? What exactly is going on? And the movie just never becomes good. And if you take the movie for what it is, then it becomes really bad. Like, if the movie that I hope for and the movie that is there is, there is a chasm between it, and I was just kind of hoping that, you know, maybe there is an issue with the translation or maybe, you know, there's like a B-side of the DVD. if you flip it over and play it backwards, it becomes awesome.
I thought my subtitles were fucking me for a long time with this movie.
But it just never... It just never quite gets there. Douglas, why? Why did you do this?
Again, you actually hit the nail on the head. The trailer promised something that the movie did not itself deliver. Hold on.
Before you go any further, why don't we tell people what this movie is actually about?
Yeah, I'm coming. I just want to first at least say that I agree. Almost, not quite, but almost wholeheartedly with Damien. This movie, right? As Damien says, it promised to be, you know, some sort of whimsical fairy tale. What it looked like from the trailer was that this man had lost his violin and was essentially on a search for a new violin that would bring him back, you know, that would make him an artist again, or able to convey the his music again properly. That's not what this movie was. Although it had some elements of that. What this movie was really, it was very melancholic and it was very opium. Morbid. It's
and children getting opium.
That kid is hilarious, by the way.
He's the only good thing about it. Probably the wife.
This movie is about the last 6 days of a man's life and about him reminiscing on how he has gotten to this position. So it's very much a character study of this man and to a lesser extent his family, right? And in that, in a sense, that is done very well, right? And this is a very technically good movie, right? I don't want to put anybody down on this. It ticks all the boxes on our list. It is beautiful. It's acted perfectly. It's directed extremely well. It just doesn't deliver what we wanted based on what we saw in the promotional items. So this man is a violinist, and at least for a long time, he was essentially the best violinist in the world, and his wife, in a jealous spat, breaks his special violin. And from that moment on, this man is looking to find... Well, first of all, he never forgives her. And second of all, he he goes around the world looking for that violence match.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Which he never finds. He never finds a violin that will actually play as well as that violin. And as I say, in a sense, that is providing us a story that the trailer gave us. But it that was very minor. That wasn't in the forefront of the movie. What the movie really is about is after that point, where when he realizes, you know what? I understand now. Mm-hmm. It's not that I can't find a good violin, because he keeps going to all these places and sending violins back and saying this violin is rubbish. He goes all the way to Tehran,
right,
and finds the greatest Stradivarius, yeah, violin ever made, right, and still is unsatisfied, yeah, and he realizes
he should have taken the magic wand.
He should have.
Or more of that opium.
A lot more of that opium. He realizes that it's not the violin, it's him.
Mm-hmm.
And he will never be able to find what he is looking for. And he comes to terms with it and decides that it is time for him to die.
Right. The next logical step.
And therefore lies down in his bed for 6 days straight and essentially calls the angel of death, who actually does physically appear in this movie.
I just want you guys to know that whenever Andrew stops making us do this podcast, I will have to take that step as well.
I hope that day never comes, Damian.
I'll make sure it never comes.
Okay.
I know people. Where is Andrew again? Moscow? Trinidad? Somewhere.
Right.
I know people.
Yeah. So this is essentially where this movie begins. All of what I said really happens in about 5 to 10 minutes,
yeah,
right? And then once he starts, once he says, it's time for me to die, let me put on my pajamas and lie down in my bed, that is when the story begins, and that is when you find out his life story, right? And you find out that his mother sent him to, I think it was called the Shiraz, this great violinist school, where his master said he had great technique but could never be an artist. And then he breaks his heart and all of a sudden is an artist, because of course no artist can be happy. All artists must have broken their heart at some point. And there are a lot of, you know, ins and outs to his life. You find out about his heartbreaks. You find out about a lot of things that he's done that he regrets, that his brother and his family either pushed him into doing or feel sorry for him for doing. And there are a lot of intimate stories that you see throughout these 6 days that he takes to die. And there still is a bit of whimsy to it, to this movie. As Damian says, you know, there is a shop where he goes to find a violin, where there is a very funny shopkeeper who has magic wands and opium and hot chocolate. Well, some sinister looking hot chocolate, but hot chocolate nonetheless. And you find out that, you know, essentially this guy is looking for love. Or that's one of the things he's looking for, and he has completely lost it. This is a very sad movie.
It's also overall a very boring movie.
And
I'm
trying to make the most of it, because as I said, technically it's a very technically good movie, but for me it was not as entertaining as I wanted it to be, because it didn't give me that fairy tale. It didn't give me that almost paper bag jellyfish type of story that I was looking for.
Sweet fairy.
And that's really, I mean, as much as I can say, I wish I loved this movie. I know somebody will.
Mm-mm.
But I didn't. Nope. Unfortunately.
Nope, you're incorrect about that. Even if you go in there hoping for you know, this kind of, you know, drab story about a guy's life, and it is what you want. You want to see some, you know, the intimate details about a man who's decided that his life is now over. That it won't do it for you.
And what saddens me even further is that this is directed, or I should probably say co-directed by, I can't remember her name, but she is a, Andrew is a big fan of hers because of Persepolis.
Yes.
And I forced us to watch a trailer for her third movie that's about to come out. And this kind of casts both of those movies in doubt in my mind. Andrew is gonna clearly have to defend Persepolis. And
remember when I said the Jesus thing looked like it might just go too far?
Yeah, I'm now getting more and more concerned for that movie.
So Andrew, you told us earlier when we spoke to you that you thoroughly enjoyed Chicken with Plums. Can you tell us why?
Well, it's a very tasty dish to start off with.
Alright, I'm going to leave.
Can I get the drums? No.
Oh look, it's time for work.
Let me start out with what I actually liked about this movie. Right? To start with, when the movie opens, and unlike you guys, I didn't look up a trailer. I just got an email, go watch this movie. I got it, I watched it, right? I had the knowledge of it's the same director, and I was like, ooh, maybe it'll turn out good. But then I was like, Douglas picked a French film, fuck. But yeah, when this movie starts off, and we have, pretty early in the movie, this scene of the violinist going to get a violin. You see him in the shop, he's playing the violin, he goes like, this will work. And then he goes on the street and he sees a woman who he thinks he knows, or he knows, and then the woman says, I don't remember you. To which he goes home and plays the violin and thinks the violin sounds like utter and complete shit, and goes and complains to the shop owner and throws it back in his face, takes back his money and goes home. And immediately I get this feeling of this deep regret, which I think was very well executed throughout that sequence of events. Because, and I could be completely wrong, because I don't think I remember seeing the movie tell me about the broken violin yet in the film. It was just him going to get a new violin. And he's, it's obvious that this moment in which this woman who doesn't remember him, if affects him so deeply that everything else in his life has lost meaning, right? And I kind of liked how it was done there. The movie continues from that point to him eventually deciding that he's done with life. He's going to die right now. So it then goes through the days of his death, the days leading up to his eventual death. And there's a scene later on in the film, and Douglas talked about it, mentioned it, where the angel of death, Azael, appears. And I feel like that scene is what I most enjoyed about her visual style that came off in Persepolis. Even though Persepolis is a full-blown animated film, and I'm pretty sure she did her own 40% of the direction, because it was basically her story and an animator was helping her very heavily throughout the way, making her story happen in the film. The way in which the entity of the Angel of Death was able to change throughout that scene was pretty fantastic, including the story that the angel told our protagonist about a man who once met the Angel of Death accidentally. Those two scenes, those two moments in this movie are enough for me to kind of give this movie a sort of pass, and that almost comes with me going, maybe this is her off movie because Persepolis, I love it so much. But otherwise, the movie kind of kind of takes it, is unable to hold a constant tone, because while I just talked about those two moments and they feel like such deep important moments where we're getting closer to this character, throughout the rest of the film it's toying with these comedic feelings. Like even when we see our protagonist finally come to the decision of he's going to die now, he has no other reason, and he's explaining it to his children, which God knows that's a crazy ass conversation, one, his son farts in the middle of his announcement, and it then paints how he imagined this conversation would have gone, which he kind of placed himself in the point of view of Socrates. It was Socrates, right? It wasn't Plato.
Yes, it was Socrates.
Right. And then he then redoes that imagination in his head with his son there farting in the middle of Socrates saying, I'm going to die now, and give his life so much meaning by explaining why he wants to die now. And it feels so weird to see that. I mean, based on a lot of the movies I've now seen in the last few months, mainly from Douglas's choosing, which were all French, I'm almost curious as to what happened in French cinema from the stage of the New Wave in the 60s to now. Because if you watch movies from Godard and Truffaut, while they all have their own elements of comedy and their own brevity to them, the movies that I'm seeing now that Douglas is forcing me to watch, I almost feel like they've forgotten what Godard and Truffaut brought about in French cinema. And I'm very curious as to what happened in between. I don't know. I mean, maybe there's someone out there who knows more than me who can recommend a few films in that in-between stage that I can see to maybe make me understand the handover that happened there.
Andrew, you're also making the mistake that we made about Korean films recently, where you assume that the movies that we see are, you know, the popular movies in that country, but that, much like the movies that most of the movies we like for American cinema are the movies that no one sees, that is true all over the place. I made that mistake and started looking up just random Korean movies, what was most popular for the year before and stuff like that, and they make the same shit that everybody makes, shitty love stories or horrendous action movies. That is true with French film as well. It's just that the films that Douglas chooses are the ones that are to Douglas's sensibilities. Douglas is not going to pick a French action movie.
He's not going to pick Un Prophète.
Right. Or that. Douglas is going to pick these kind of French whimsical type of movies. Just like if I am going to go see a Korean film, I want the revenge
movie.
Because
yeah.
That is what the evidence for those, you know, being good is strong. So let's not make that mistake and, you know, use these movies to generalize that you are, because especially in France population is so diverse. They have, you know, a lot of immigrants from Africa, and so a lot of their music and movies are influenced by that. And can you stop that, Douglas?
No, I didn't mean to make it play. I just wanted to go to the website.
And so a lot of what is popular over there is also things that are popular in the States, of course. But then they have, you know, their versions of their big blockbuster movies. Even when, what was the movie with the car that could fly that we saw?
Oh, Black Lightning. Lightning, yes.
Right.
That was a good movie. Yeah.
When I saw that movie, you know, I went and I looked at, you know, movies similar to that, you know, these guys have made, and, you know, a lot of the movies that they make are the big blockbustery action-y type movie, because you know, that's where you can have a lot of things on the screen blow up and, you know, stupid action, horrendous dialogue. And people who pay attention to that scene, they're right that, you know, most of the movies are just these terrible movies that, you know, they crank out every year. It's the same issue that a lot of people have with Bollywood movies. But every now and again, you have, you know, those directors that choose to make movies that are not like that. And so you get these movies that the rest of the world talks about. We only pay attention to a certain subset of movies. We don't really go around watching, you know, like the big Mexican blockbuster movies, because I recently found out that Mexico puts out a boatload of action movies. And I just kind of assumed that it would be, you know, of the machete type, or, you know, those shitty, you know, kind of funny action movies. But no, they make like real big blockbuster type action movies, but we don't see any of those. Every time we hear about a movie coming from Mexico, it's this indie director that, you know, made this and have these actors in it. So we shouldn't, just because Douglas only picks this one subset, we shouldn't just immediately assume that, you know, all the directors over there only made these movies. I'm sure that's not true.
I'm pretty sure there's a Little Nicholas franchise.
Well, to give some credence to that, it is a franchise of children's books.
Oh no!
Right.
Right. So you love the movie, right? Because you didn't really give an answer.
I didn't like the movie, no. But okay. there are things that I did like about it. Those two moments and those two scenes particularly.
Those two moments in an hour and a half movie were pretty good. Andrew's review. Can you put that on the website, please? And put a score attached to it. 9 out of 10. These two scenes are awesome. Watch this movie. Andrew, outro this podcast for me, please. I think you've come to our end.
Oh my goodness. So that's been the podcast. Don't watch Chicken for Plums. This is what we think about things. Thanks so much for listening. Wow. You can find me on Twitter at @gmarinreviews.
Andrew, you have Damien, a stroke?
At @Damien_White. Douglas is at DJR Lost His Name. You can find the podcast on iTunes. We're also at gmarinreviews.com, where you can find all of my writings. Thanks so much for listening. Good night.
Is he being threatened?
I guess this thing is over.